Whoa. You thought that Jaws was the greatest shark attack movie of all time? Oh, find out how wrong you are on today's episode of That Song From That Movie. Stop.
In the name of love.
I'll take it. Thank you for joining That Song From That Movie, the journey through the very best and worst of movie songs. I am your deepest, bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin host, Dietrich. And today we're joined by the deepest, bluest, his hat is like a shark's fin, Alex.
Oh, I love it. You see, is it, and it is hat, isn't it? Because I thought at first that it might be head, because I felt that sort of makes more sense.
Does it?
Maybe it makes less sense. I don't know. We'll get into it, I suppose.
And we're also joined by the deepest, bluest, his hat is like a shark's fin, Ben.
Of all the amazing lyrics in this song, you've gone for the first.
He repeats it so many times, I felt like I too had to repeat it so many times.
Okay, well, I think it's that you're doing it a bit of a dirty.
What have you been watching this week?
What have we watched? I've watched a couple of things, so I watched the Cats movie.
Oh, God.
It is as bad as everyone said.
It really is, isn't it?
I feel like it was so bad that it will eventually become like a cult film. I don't know what you guys think on that front, but I feel like it was so unusual to look at that it must become a cult film. Otherwise, there's no point going on anymore.
It's a proper fever dream, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, trying to put a narrative to something that has no narrative.
It just like thrusts you in with no explanation as well, and I feel like it needs so much explanation that you just lost for the entire film. And you're like, "What's a Jellicle cat?" They've mentioned it many times.
Also, I just feel like the size of them is so off. Like, how tall are these cats? Because some things are just huge. Like, it looks like there's like a dustbin at one point that's maybe the same size as them, and later on, it's like 15 times bigger.
I think the entire film, though, could have just... It would have been about 1,000 times better if they'd simply just not CGI'd it and just put them in Lycra. Do you know, like, the stage show?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't have been good still, but it would have been immediately better. And, you know, maybe just use, like, real sets, but I don't know. It was pretty bad. The other thing that we watched was something called Behind Her Eyes, which is, like, a Netflix TV show.
Never heard of it.
Not heard of that.
Weird. Really weird. It has the most strange and bizarre twist in it you'll ever see in a TV show. That's guaranteed. But it's not...
They're actually cats.
Yes, and this is where it comes in. Cool. It's kind of... I don't obviously want to go into it because anyone does want to watch it, but it's unexpected, but not in a good way. It's kind of... It feels really, like, awkward.
Like cats?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I've been watching.
What about you, Ben?
Not much. I finally finished watching Mindhunter, which I've been meaning to finish for a long time. The David Fincher series about the FBI profilers. And then I watched Whiplash again. That's about it, which is a very easily digestible, very good film. Dave, have you watched anything?
I'll let you guess what I've been watching.
PUBG.
Correct.
Moving on.
Correct.
No, it's not, this podcast has dedicated way too much time to PUBG.
So today's episode is the Better Than Jaws movie, Deep Blue Sea, featuring LL Cool J's seminal hit, Deepest Bluest, brackets, Shark's Fin, close bracket. So to find out what was happening in the world when the movie came out, over to you, Ben.
Lovely stuff. So we're going back to October 1999. We'll pick some slightly offbeat news articles here, and this is definitely one for the UK-centric audiences. So Braintree in Essex is declared to have the ugliest collection of people in the UK by travel writer Bill Murphy. And apparently he specifies that this is outside of Wales, just to accentuate that point. He claims such things as the town's women best resemble sea monsters, and the only good thing about it is the M11 heading south. If we have any listeners from Braintree, please let us know if this is true. District Councillor Barbara Buchan said, "At the risk of sounding big-headed, I don't think I look anything like a sea monster. He clearly hasn't given the town a chance. Do you think Freeport Leisure would invest £1 million in Braintree if it thought the town was in decay?" Well, Bill Murphy, he never responded. In other news, the controversial Sensation Art Exhibition, which I'd heard of before, opens in New York and London by young British artists, which is an actual monikers, not just young British artists. And it features works such as a giant portrait of serial killer Myra Hindley, made with casts of infants' hands.
Of course, yeah.
Of course, as you would. As well as a Black Madonna depiction of the Virgin Mary, made from pictures of female genitalia and elephant dung.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's just a typical sort of art exhibition. Despite cries for it to be banned from New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, everyone's favourite New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, still around, the exhibition was incredibly popular with the public, and the New York Times, our favourite newspaper, published a long list of celebrities including Susan Sarandon, Steve Martin and Arthur Miller, and many others who supported the work and its message. Now another piece of work with a long list of advocates is the 1999 sci-fi horror film Deep Blue Sea.
What a segue.
Directed by Rennie Harlin and starring Thomas Jane, Samuel Jackson and the Uncle L himself, the future of funk and self-proclaimed goat, LL Cool J. Set in an isolated underwater facility, the film follows a team of scientists and their research on mako sharks in an attempt to help combat Alzheimer's disease. Instead, very much instead, what they actually do is make super smart sharks that go on a rampage and flood the facility. Spoilers. There's going to be a lot of spoilers. So, the film is considered to be the greatest shark-based film of all time.
By who?
by LL Cool J, probably.
Was this only at the time of release? Because I assume that Deep Blue Sea 2 and 3 are better.
Sorry, I've got in brackets here shot outside of Amity Island. Okay, that's important to note.
Oh, yeah, you're nice.
Not shot in 1977. On a budget of $82 million, it made $165 million during a busy autumn blockbuster period that included The Sixth Sense, The Mummy and The Haunting. What do you guys think of this film?
As a member of a, let's say, mildly successful movie podcast, I should be saying that this is terrible, right? Wrong. It's fantastic. Oh, it's such a great journey with genuine surprise in some scenes. I don't want to jump on it too quickly because I'm sure Ben's going to take us on a ride for this entire film.
Get ready for a 3-hour podcast.
It's going to be the longest episode ever.
Let's quickly go on to Alex's opinion. Go.
Yeah, okay. Well,
crack the knuckles.
What I would say off the bat is that I don't regret watching this film.
That's a great review.
And like, there's so much you can talk about this film, so I don't know if to even go into any of this or not. But I think you already touched on the general plot there, Ben, about them trying to extract this like protein from a shark in order to cure Alzheimer's. And they accidentally made the sharks into super intelligent killing machines. And it just reminded me, I don't know if you guys have seen that like Dara O'Brien comedy sketch about the film 2012. And like, there's this line at the beginning to explain what happens in the rest of the film, which is just that the neutrinos have mutated. And I feel like this is exactly the same. It's just we accidentally made the sharks' brains bigger, so now they're really intelligent. And then let's just see what happens next.
Aren't they trying to combat Alzheimer's disease in the Planet of the Apes films as well?
Oh,
I'm pretty sure it is, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's his dad, because it's James Franco's dad.
Yeah. So this is a
Rise of the Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah. It's all well meaning and it ends terribly. I think in films in like Shaun of the Dead, it's GM crops.
It's interesting that you defined it as a sci-fi at the beginning. I don't know. Oh. Is this sci-fi? Or was it meant to be sci-fi? That's not going to quite work out.
I thought it was a documentary.
I was like, are they trying to make this realistic? Because I can't tell.
Surely not. I think the 90s was all about having fun.
Well, this film is definitely fun. I think that's one thing you can't deny.
Now, both of you, even though we are 90s kids, you've just recently saw this, right? For the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Shameful. Do you think as children, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, you would have enjoyed this just as much?
I think I would have thought this was cool as shit.
the sharks are so shit in this film. The CGI is
Oh my god, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, so I think maybe at the time it would have been like, oh my god, look how realistic those sharks are. as opposed to now, where it's pretty much the opposite. It's almost comical.
It's funny how certain films, like you go back and watch Jurassic Park, and it's not too bad, you know, from like 6 years
previous. Because they used animatronics? What did they use in this?
I don't know, like the original mech.
There was a part at one point where it wasn't even like the shark, it was the shark moving quickly in water to demonstrate how much faster it was than the other shark. Even that was crap.
The bit where the two sharks eat the other shark is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. The one thing I would say, though, is the sets with the water are brilliant. Pretty incredible. And the stunts, some of the stunts are amazing. There's a part where, presumably, LL Cool J's stunt double gets, like, flushed through, like, a corridor. I was like, that looks genuinely like he could be about to die.
Yeah, that looks like it actually hurts.
I'm pretty sure...
slams into a wall at one point.
I'm pretty sure it's either The Abyss or The Titanic, but one of James Cameron's sets for one of those water-based films was used for this. So yeah. I guess they had a lot of, you know, they had a lot of use of probably a much better film with a much bigger budget. But still, $82 million is an expensive film for the time. Now, as you were watching this, did you think, and I'm sure you did, that one performance in particular was central to carrying the weight of this narrative?
Is it the parrot?
I don't know which way you're going with this.
Which way am I going with this, D?
He's going LL Cool J.
It's going to be, isn't it? Yeah.
I think LL Cool J said, before you go into it, Ben, because I can sense that you're going to... He had a much bigger role in this film than I anticipated.
He does, doesn't he?
Yes.
Especially from the way the movie starts. You think, oh, it's just like a throwaway gag that he's the chef.
Yeah, you expect him to die very early on. Spoiler, he doesn't.
He becomes a shark.
He is instrumental to this plot. But it's interesting it's interesting you say that, Alex. Because director Rennie Harlin forced the studio into hiring LL Cool J because he wanted a character who could bring, in quotes, a lot of warmth and humour to the film without it being a joke-type humour. Because when I think of humour, I think of LL Cool J. He also said LL Cool J was originally, in the original script, was going to be shark meat early on, but he was so good, apparently, they kept him around.
Everything after that first scene is just ad-libbed. He was just going for it.
He even brought his own parrot.
He filmed that entire scene in the oven, just by himself.
Method. Yes, Sam Jackson was originally intended to play the role of the chef, but apparently his management didn't think it was good enough for him. So they made the character of Russell Franklin the sort of money bags character. You have to admit as well, the scene where he dies is very good.
That is fantastic, isn't it? You do not expect that to happen.
It's very Drew Barrymore in Scream. It's very Drew Barrymore in Scream. He's the only big character.
You don't expect it to happen.
I expect it to happen because he stood next to
him. Specifically warns him. He's like, oh, don't stand next to that giant gaping hole of water.
Yeah, but it's like, I've had it with these motherfucking sharks on this motherfucking sea base.
Super quiet layer.
And Stellan Skarsgård's character left studying sharks to go and study astrology in sense, and then that is preluded to Thor.
He is playing the same role, isn't he?
He likes playing, yeah, he's smart, slightly foreign. I think that's what the sort of American audiences take to.
In fact, a lot of the actors in this film are just playing the roles that they always play, like Michael Rappaport, his name is, he just plays himself.
Yeah.
As he does in everything.
But no joke, various critics of the time praised LL Cool J's performance as standout, saying his blend of Bible talk, smack and wit worked very well, and it saw him as a potential new action star, which they predicted very well for NCIS. Where LL Cool J is still today.
That show is very popular. Too popular, really.
Yes, very much so.
Probably because of all the warmth that he brings to it, the warmth and humour. But not jokes humour, just humour. Was it me, or did like the crew in this film, as the film went on, they seemed to care less and less about other members of the crew dying? Like, at the beginning, it was like, oh my god, that guy, the scientist, is dead. Let's panic. And then, like, it was like, yeah, and the one's died. I mean, this isn't being just spoiler, I suppose, so spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
When the woman dies at the end, like, what is she doing? Why did she jump in the water? And she just died. That was genuinely the only surprising part of that film. Was when she was like, yeah, she jumped in the water, it was a diversion, and the shark just killed her. It was like, all right, okay. Why did she do that again?
In the original script, she gets away.
Well, that's what I was expecting to happen, so that's why it was genuinely, like, a bit of a twist for me. And well, to be fair, I do think she deserved to die because it was everything was her fault. Did. So I'm guessing that's why they made that change in the script. But
yeah, how obvious is it that she's the bad guy, though? The shifty looks and everything.
Yeah.
But yes. I mean, we're diverting here from the true point of this, which is LL Cool J. So please, Alex, can I bring you back to the central point of this film?
Please do.
Now, obviously, when you're getting LL Cool J, you know you're getting a 2-for-1 deal. Of course he can act. But apparently, he can also sing. So he recorded 2 songs for this film. One we really don't care about because the other supersedes it and then some. And that is the song that plays over the credits. The first song, which is the brilliant, deepest, bluest, open brackets, shark's fin, close brackets. Now, listeners, if you were aware of this song, I'm shocked. I'm surprised. If you are not, pause this. Go to YouTube, watch the music video. You will not be disappointed. Return to us and enjoy in the dissection of a hip-hop classic.
How good was that?
Exactly. There you go. You weren't disappointed, were you? So before we go into the history and lore...
Of which there is a lot.
Well, I don't know. I'm not pushing. I'm not pushing it. Maybe I'm setting myself up to fail here. What do you guys think, Alex?
Why did you just start
first, in fact, first, Alex, what did you think when I suggested doing a podcast episode on the song Deepest Bluest?
I thought it was odd, I must admit. A film that neither me and Dee had seen, a song that no one, not just me and Dee, but anywhere has ever heard of. By an artist who's kind of been irrelevant for at least, probably before the song was released, let's be honest, since the 80s, I imagine. So yeah, I thought it was an odd choice.
D, were you sceptical?
I was sceptical until, I don't know, 10 seconds into it. And at that moment, I knew it was the perfect choice. I thought it was ballsy, actually, of LL Cool J to release a song that close to the end of the millennium in an attempt to have the song of the millennium.
The song of the millennium. Brilliant. That's alluded us slightly to D's view of this song. Alex, come on, give us an insight.
Well, I wasn't keen, I'll be honest. I enjoyed it.
I almost spat out my beer.
I enjoyed it over the end credits. And I'll be honest, I don't really understand what it's about. Is he saying he's a shark? Is he saying he's like a shark? I didn't understand what the song was about.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, but I've given it a go. So if you've still not listened to it, I would describe this as a slip and sliding hip-hop onslaught in which LL Cool J is attacked by 10,000 gallons of water while he pontificates as to whether he wants to kill you or have sex with you.
There we have it, guys. The greatest sentence ever said on the podcast.
In brackets, shark's fin, close brackets. It is the Hey Porsche by Nelly of the late 90s.
What a claim.
And Nelly would accept that. So, the song was never officially released.
What?
It can't be found on LL's YouTube page. It isn't on Spotify. And any mention of it on the internet is limited to Reddit posts of surprise that it exists. People are going to Google it and get this episode, guys.
That's smart. That's smart marketing, that though.
We've slightly alluded to the video. Guys, what do you think?
Whereas the song I was confused by... I mean, the video I was confused by as well, but I enjoyed the visual spectacle.
Visual spectacle, I'll go with that.
Yeah, now, knowing what you said about the song, that makes the video more confusing, because, like, he's saying his hat is like a shark's fin, but at one point in the video, he turns it into a shark, and and they're, like, looking at the glasses, the scene from the film where the shark attacks him, but it's not a shark, it's LL Cool J swimming through the murky waters and slams into the glass. I'm so confused.
Alex, he's a shark of the rap game.
Oh, okay. Is that where it's a reference to?
I haven't got a clue, Alex. I'm just kind of, like I said, I'm pontificating.
The only other thing I had on it really was that I enjoyed his like sort of like gimp like S&M sort of suit that he had on, and it kind of reminded me of that Liberty X video.
Really? I think wearing Kevlar has come back in recently in like the rap hip hop grime game. Oh yeah, definitely. This is where it originated from.
Is it like a deleted scene from Twin Peaks?
Alex, is it a deleted scene from Twin Peaks?
It is, yeah.
There we go. You heard it here first, gentlemen. So we've got a lot more to say on this. But first, we need to delve deeper to understand the enigma that is LL Cool J. So first, were you both aware of this man growing up? I assume so, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That's why I want a chorus of yeses. Thank you, gentlemen. How many songs can you actually name by LL Cool J?
Oh, probably pretty much none.
I can say things like, he's in that song with J-Lo.
Yeah.
Which is what?
All I Have?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And Deepest Bluest, you can't have that one.
Deepest Bluest. So you cannot name any other LL Cool J song.
There's some that I have in my head where he's like wearing like a red hat and red tracksuit bottoms.
So oh, yes, that narrows it down.
His general look from like 1985 to like the early 90s.
Well, until Deepest Bluest, yeah, when he decided to copy Liberty X for some unknown reason.
I don't think he's copied Liberty X.
No, Liberty X might have copied him.
Even though he self-proclaims himself as the GOAT, he is a pretty big deal. But I was the same. I can't name that many songs. The only other one I could name before I looked into this was Mama Said Knock You Out. Do you know that one?
No, is that his?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the case for a lot of his songs. But you go on YouTube and you look at any of his late 90s, early noughties songs, and they had a lot of similarities in the videos. LL's got his top off. Gold chain hanging. He's somewhere tropical, maybe Florida or California, and there's often a harem of scantily clad women dancing around for his enjoyment, while he raps about wealth, fame, success. Mm-hmm. Good things come in threes. I kind of put him in that Ja Rule Flow Rider bracket.
Flow Rider?
Maybe Flow Rider was a bit later. But oh, yeah, LL Cool J was a pioneer of hip-hop, which I never really knew. Until I watched the Beastie Boys documentary. I think the Beastie Boys actually gave Rick Rubin LL Cool J's demo.
Wow.
So Def Jam Records, when it started, by Rick Rubin and is it Gene Simmons?
From Kiss?
No, that's why I'm thinking it's not Gene Simmons, it's someone Simmons. Alongside Run DMC and the Beastie Boys, he was basically one of the pioneers of like B-boy hip-hop and like a new school of hip-hop, which I never at all knew. His first single, I Need a Beat, which came out in 1985, basically got Def Jam the distribution deal with Capitol Records and led Def Jam to be sort of like, you know, the phenom that it was. Just kind of stripped back rap, which the sort of artists that came before, like the Sugar Hill Gang or Grandmaster Flash, artists like this didn't really have. So he was like seminal. I think he was the first to do like a rap love song. He was the first to do like a Californian rap song, a bit like what Tupac made famous later on. He's got 2 Grammy Awards for Best Rap Solo Performance, multiple platinum-selling albums, and yeah, basically a pioneer of rap, which, from my opinion as a child, was not the person I knew of.
And none of it really shows itself in Deepest Bluest.
That's where I'm getting back to. One of his songs, and here's the connection, so one of his big hits, I'm Bad, which is a huge B-boy hit from 1987, where he's trashing the current rap game. Here's one of the lyrics. MCs can't win. I make them rust like tin. They call me Jaws. My hat is like a shark's fin.
Oh. Whoa.
12 years later, deja vu. He's referring his own song.
It all makes so much sense.
Apparently, when he's referring to a shark's fin, what it is basically referring to is, similar to how you said, Alex, LL Cool J was almost always, in the 80s and early 90s, seen wearing a black or red Kangol. Doesn't really look like a shark's fin, but I can kind of see where he's going.
It's posh.
From the right angle, it doesn't. A Kangol doesn't have the same impact nowadays as it does, or it did in the 80s. But I can dig it.
Jesus.
Now that's just one amazing lyric in this phenomenal song that is Deepest Bluest, open bracket, shark's fin, close bracket. Do you have any other favourites, guys, before I delve into some of them?
I think, Ben, just crack on.
Dive right in.
Okay, these are just some of my personal favourites. I'm not the aficionado on this song, but I probably am. We dueling with the mind, you blind, crippled or crazy. You're real easy to find, struggling to flow, with hemorrhages in your throat, getting the lap dance while I smash through your boat.
Yeah, so you see, I did remember the hemorrhage part, because it's like, oh, because the other guy at one point says, I've got a hemorrhage in my arm and the shark will be able to smell that through my skin. And I was like, and then I heard it in the rap, I was like, oh, it's a callback to the film. And then obviously the boat is at the beginning, so.
Genius.
So in these parts, is he a shark?
Again, I'm struggling to know, yes, what are you LL Cool J or are you a Mako shark? He spends a few lines identifying with the shark's predatory nature.
Yeah.
Only to make it super weird with some shark on human sexual imagery, such as your life vest is off, and that turns me on. Again, I don't. What are you wanting to do, LL? But this is the thing. I think LL Cool J was never satisfied with just being a rapper. He's always pushing boundaries. He tried to set up his own hip-hop label and recording company. It failed, but he tried. He tried to set up his own clothing label. It failed, but he tried. He tried to start an acting career. I'll leave that for you to decide how that went down.
I mean, pretty well, as we've said about the NCIS thing.
I've never watched an episode of NCIS.
There's been like 40 ever. Seasons of that now, haven't there?
Yeah.
Does he have any other film listings to his name?
SWAT.
Yeah, he's in SWAT. Yeah. He's in the film Toys with Robin Williams. I think that was his first film, actually. He's also in a film that just came out before this. Oh, what's it called? He plays a guy called, like, God, which he probably self-cast himself. It's terrible, whatever it is. I forget what it's called, but it's terrible.
Deep Blue Sea 3.
In all seriousness, is this a So Bad It's Good song? Or is it just a plain bad song? Or is it, like Dee put it, the song of the millennium?
Are you putting that to us as a genuine question?
Oh, yes, I am, but I really want to know. It's one of those things when I sometimes lose myself in excitement. I can't tell if I enjoy this out of sheer enjoyment or I'm enjoying it because I enjoy ripping it like a shark.
Ooh.
That wasn't even a no, guys. That's how good I am.
Obviously, I made the joke about it being the song of the millennium. It is actually in the so bad it's good category, which suits the film. So if it's designed to be a promotional song for the film, it succeeds.
Do you know, very recently, I think as of 2 weeks ago, LL Cool J was nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
For this song?
And did this cite this song?
Not for this song. He was one of 16 nominees, and he currently sits, because you can see the rankings, at a very healthy 15th on that list. So, you know, it's not bad.
I think none of people who were voting for that have heard the song.
Ironically, the only person he's higher than is Jay-Z. Jay-Z has often said that LL Cool J is a mockery to the rap game. So, in your face, Jay-Z, where's your episode? Yeah? I know I've asked this a lot, guys, but this song, it stands highly in 90s creature features. You know, big, unusual, fighting against some monster, animal. But I'm asking you, what actually is the top five creature features of the 90s?
Of the 90s?
I forced that segue, but I had to.
Top five.
Five.
Anaconda.
Anaconda is number one, D.
What? Yes. hang on, I've got one. Deepest Bluest.
What? It's called Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, sorry. Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea's not in this list.
I mean, I'm guessing Godzilla might be one of them.
Godzilla is number five.
Ooh.
Was
you're doing
like
well. You might eight... actually do well at this without LL Cool J Freaks was in the 2000s, Alex.
Oh, was it?
Terrible. As big fans of David Arquette, you should have known that.
But at least I've got one. Godzilla. But I'll take that.
Come on.
Oh, Tremors.
Tremors is number two. D, you're killing it.
I thought, did we not say that Tremors was 80s?
Tremors was 1990, Alex.
Oh, it was 1990, right.
Yes, that makes sense. Yes. So you've got two more. Come on, you're doing well. You're doing well.
Is Predator, does that count?
Is that nice? I think it would, because technically on this list, Alien Resurrection was eighth. So Predator would have counted, but I think Predator is the 80s. They're actual animals, not
I see. Okay,
weird. Right. Although I think number four is an enlarged animal. Number three is just a lot of animals. Number three was a film that made me not be able to sleep on the floor for several months.
But it's not Eight-Legged Freaks.
On the same lines, Alex.
Well, it is spiders. Arachnophobia. Is
thank
that
you. Number three. Oh, yeah, yes. A film.
Just guessed a word.
I felt like I'd heard that was a film.
Just guessing fears. Number four, very similar to Anaconda, takes place in a jungle.
And it's an enlarged
personally,
animal.
Personally, a much superior film. Yes, enlarged animal, real animal.
But not a gorilla. Is it a gorilla?
No, it's not a gorilla.
I wouldn't say it's not Mighty Joe Young. It's not
Big cast, Bridget Fonda, Bill Pullman.
The only film I can think of in the 90s with Bill Pullman in his Casper. I'm guessing it's not that.
No. It's a water-based animal.
An alligator of some kind? Or
yeah,
crocodile?
come on.
Crocodile Dundee.
Paul Hogan is not, as much as you'd like to think, Alex, Paul Hogan is not an animal.
I don't know a film with a crocodile.
Oh my god, you don't know. D, come on. Two words.
Big croc.
Lake Placid.
Is that what that is?
Honest to God, you guys call yourself 90s kids, honestly. Did you not watch Channel 5 growing up?
I got Anaconda, didn't I?
Fine.
Do you got the top two? I mean, I got the other two.
One, you know, I still am waiting to be impressed in a top five.
I mean, we could talk about the main revelation I have from this film, which is how to make an omelette. Did you guys know this?
I didn't. I'm not a big fan of omelettes.
Well, so, I mean... There's a part in it where Uncle Jay's character is sort of like leaving a video message behind in case anyone finds it in future and wants to know what happened to them. And then he ends the video with, "We will start with the perfect omelette, which was made from two eggs and not three. Amateurs often add milk for density, but this is a mistake." Now, I feel like when I've made omelettes, I've added milk and usually use three eggs. So now I'm going to try the LL Cool J technique.
The LL Cool, as it's known.
I don't usually add milk.
You're not an amateur like me, then, do you?
No.
But I feel like when I've added milk, though, it's never been for density.
Do you also have to wear a Kangol while you make it?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe.
I really, of all people...
Have you shirt off?
I think you could pull off the Kangol, Alex.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I'm lying.
Anyway, it's time for the ultimate question.
This is too difficult.
Yep, Deep Blue Sea versus Deepest Bluest. Open brackets, Shark's Fin, close brackets. Ben, clearly you need more time to think about this, so Alex, do you want to go first?
Yeah, the film. It was good, whereas the song wasn't. Simple as that. The film surprised me. The song did not. There you go.
The song did not surprise you? When I sent you this link, you were just like, yep, that's what I'd expect.
Yeah, that kind of, yeah. I mean, not quite. I mean, yeah. I didn't expect it to be so blurred between whether he was a human or a shark, but...
Your lockdown is
it made it surprise me that I expected both to be bad, and the film wasn't, and the song was as bad as I expected it to be. So I was surprised in that sense. I mean, the content of the song definitely did surprise me. I can't deny that.
And what about you, Ben?
I just don't honestly know if the shark genre would succeed without this film.
I think it was this song.
I mean, yeah, what has done more for the shark genre, this song or this film? I mean, in all seriousness, once you get past Jaws and this film, is there many other good shark films?
I've never seen The Meg.
I've never watched The Meg.
Is there a Street Sharks film?
There is not a Street Sharks film, unfortunately.
No, the TV show was good, though.
It was Jawsome.
It was Jawsome. But I've never seen, what about those Sharknadoes? Are they good films?
I've never actually ever watched one.
It feels like you've not watched enough shark films to be able to judge whether...
Yeah, you know what? That's true.
You need a Shark Week, though.
Yeah, to be fair, that's a big deal in the States, isn't it? Yeah, you know what? To respect that group of people, I'm going to have to say Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement. You've got to go for the film. As good. I'm doing inverted commas, but you can't see that because this is an audio medium. But as good as the song is to make fun of, the movie, I think, is an enjoyable romp. So, movie. So, if I've counted correctly, that's 3-0 to the movie, right?
Yes, it is. Sorry, LL.
But he's in the film.
So that brings it into another episode of That Song From That Movie. Let us know on Twitter which one you think is better, the movie or the song. What is our Twitter handle, Ben?
You can get us at TSFTMPod.
You can help the podcast in a multitude of ways, but the funnest way is on Reddit by sharing this on a random subreddit. And what should that random subreddit be, Alex?
Well, I mean, it's not random, dude. There's only one obvious choice here. It's r/ladieslovecooljames.
What, the full thing?
Yeah. Because I'm sure that the people in there have committed to the full thing.
True, we never gave him his full title, did we? Ladies Love Cool James.
It's not very cool, is it?
No, it's really not. But it probably was in the 80s if you wore a Kangol.
True. So you can help us on Patreon, and you can help us by buying merch, but you can also help us by giving us a 5-star review I was going to say if you enjoyed this, but even if you didn't enjoy it, still give us a 5-star review. It's a contractual agreement now. You've listened this far, you have to give us a 5-star review.
People,
if you've already given us a 5-star review, put your feet up, put the kettle on. You've done your job. So all that's left now is to do some goodbyes. So it's goodbye from myself, goodbye, and goodbye from Alex.
I feel like this quote from the film really sums up Ben yesterday. You wait your whole life for a single moment, and then suddenly it's tomorrow.
Oh God.
And goodbye from Ben.
Always respect the brackets.
So goodbye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
One of the quotes I've got on this list. We're this close to the reactivation of a human brain cell.